Welcome to the May 9th, 2020 session of TeamSpeak for OpenHPSDR. My name is Dave, KV0S, and I have been working on a few projects, mostly on the Tangerine project or on some work programming. So that's kept me busy this week. It's also the end of our school year, so I've got grading to do this coming week, and so things have kept me a little busy. So next on the list, we have Greg, ZL3IX, shown as mic muted, and then we have Henry, PA0HJA, shown as away and recording, and then we have Mike, AA8K, shown as recording and mic muted, and we thank Mike for posting the TeamSpeak sessions to tsarchive.openhbsdr.org. Next, we have Phil, VK6PH. Go ahead, Phil.
Thanks, Dave. Good morning, afternoon, evening all. Nothing much to report this week. A very heavy work week, but still helping quite a few people out with their existing systems that they've pulled out off the shelf and kept getting work again, but they're all going very well. So quite a lot of email support this week, but no time, unfortunately, for anything else. So back to you, Dave.
Well, fine business. And next on the list, we have Bill, KD5TFD. Go ahead, Bill.
Hey, folks. Good evening. Yeah, nothing to report here. Still hunkering in place and getting crushed by work, but happy to listen in and hear folks out here and fixing the wiki. Still on my list, Dave. Just, I don't know, maybe this weekend.
Okay, well, hopefully we'll get it going again, and people can look at some of the wonderful wiki pages we've written. Once it's sometime, I want to sit down and explore how that stuff is organized, but I haven't done it yet. Anyway, next on the list, we have Bob, VE3GKM, shown as recording and away. And that brings us to the end of our list, and so we're open for general discussion.
From your channel. So, Phil, have you guys gotten to open up for business down there yet?
Yes, we start very shortly. It's over a couple of months, but all the schools are open now. Cafes and restaurants are open, but a maximum of, I think it's 10 people. A few numbers allowed to go to churches, offices are opening, some of the major shops are starting to open. So yeah, we've got a plan now, which is that was public yesterday, about how we're going to start getting back to normal. And by July, I think first week in July, all workplaces and offices will be open again.
Very nice. Well, good to hear. It's they're theoretically opening here, but it's pretty limited. Sort of interesting. After here, we have a lot of places have gone to all open plan offices, which I think is going to make it a little, a lot of that's going to get a little rethought.
I did see an ad for open plan furniture, and I thought, oh, they invented this stuff before the virus.
Yeah, we had ones where, what was it, I had been moved into open plan space and was back into traditional office with door space in one of the older buildings for a while, but that building's actually scheduled to get blown up sometime next year, so we'd seen plans for what it looked like for us, and it was sort of maximum butts per square foot type mode stuff, and I wonder how much of that's getting rethought now.
Yeah, the one thing that does seem appealing in my office the last 2 years or so, a lot of people got the stand-up desks, and not everybody, but a few, maybe 10 or 20% of the people got those, and they put them on their sit-down desk, but then they could adjust the height. So those seem to be popular.
Yeah, those are fairly popular around here as well. But, I had a lot of co-workers looking. Actually, it's funny, in the those were all in the new open plan spaces, and the guys in the traditional spaces, they actually promised them, and then they decided, well, if the building's gonna get torn down, they'll just wait until they do renovations somewhere else on open plan and stuff. So they put it off, and that was not welcomed by the natives too well.
Well, I can understand. Yep. So, interesting. My office is all locked up, but I have two computers that I can remotely log into of my own, and they have been working fine. So, every once in a while, a glitch happens that you have to touch it, but most of the time it isn't.
Yeah, I can't get into my office either, and I had one machine in there to try to get remote into, which I was able to for a while, but I suspect it has at some point rebooted, and it's now sitting waiting for me to enter the password for the hard disk prompt, which you can't do remotely, which is why I never wanted a hard disk password on there to begin with. But the security folks said, no, that's against standard, even if it is in a locked office. So, grr.
Oh, well. Yeah, I don't know. But I guess if you really needed something on that disk, there's somebody wandering the halls that could, I don't know. We have an IT guy that goes in and works in the building, and then one of the administrators goes in and checks the building.
Yeah, I can get in there if it was really urgent, and but actually got to go through there's actually a process to get added to the list and get your badge put on the list to get into the building.
It kind of sounds like a thing you don't want to do, because then you might have to go in more.
No, right now there's really no pressure for that. I sort of wonder if that day will come, but at the moment they're actually trying to make it pretty hard to get into the building.
Yep. Well, our building's locked, and then I think last week they did a deep cleaning of the building by the custodian maintenance people. So they were warning that they were going to be doing that, and they've been fixing things. They turned off hot water for a while, and they turned off, you know, it has a lab space, so it has things like gas to the lab benches and hoods and all these. And so there's lots of little things that have to be fixed, and this is the time the maintenance people love because they aren't bothering anybody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so you're in a building with the traditional type wet labs, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's like two wings. One wing is mostly all offices, and one wing is mostly all labs or classrooms.
Yeah, we had that when I worked in the research labs. You'd have offices on one, or every other aisle almost. It was, you know, offices and then labs and the like. And that was when I was on a aisle which had offices on one side, labs on the other, and you'd always hear things go bang and boom in the lab across the aisle, and you'd wonder, okay, is it time to run yet?
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, most of my colleagues are biologists, and so there are some that deal with chemical processes. I was one that basically built models of things, and so there's all kinds of different disciplines or different technical attributes, but we all worked on basically trees and wildlife animals.
Oh, I see.
I've been playing around with the ESP32 processor for a while, and decided I've got a commercial project to do with it, but the Arduino development environment for it is fine for a hobbyist and a project where you put whatever time you like into, but not when you're in a hurry. So I moved over to the Visual Studio Code API for it, which is very nice. It's like Visual Studio I've been using for years, But also found that there's a hardware interface you can get to the ESP32, which connects to the JTAG, and that way you can set breakpoints, you can stop the processor, change variable settings on the fly, and you can, you know, display all the excuse me, you can display all the variables in your code, and it also manages all the libraries much better than the Arduino interface. But yeah, certainly fun to be using a processor and be able to step through the code and you know, monitor all the variables as you go along. And very simple and easy to implement, connect to the ESP32.
I was curious, does it have its own syntax, or can you write in C or C sharp or something?
Yeah, it's basically C sharp.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or Python, if you want, like in Python.
Yeah, it seems like Python's creeping into most things, most UIs now, because so many people know it.
Yeah, I think it's getting somewhere near the top of the demand for programmers and their programming abilities now.
Yeah, it is. And I've been fooling with GNU Radio and trying to compile it from scratch, which is quite an ordeal, but I was able to do it. It's just tedious.
Okay, and that was under Windows or under Linux?
Under Linux.
Okay.
There are packages to install it, but Tom McDermott just came out with a version of HPSDR in GNU Radio for the GNU Radio 3.8.
I was going to say, GNU Radio on Windows is even a bigger adventure, and probably easiest is see if you can scrounge one of Tom McDermott's CDs.
Oh, yeah. I could probably get one. He was doing them on Windows. He gave a nice little workshop in the Dallas area. It must have been last October or so.
I was at that workshop. I think that was the microwave update was in Dallas. Is that just last year? God, it seems like an awful long time ago now.
Yes, that was the workshop.
I have those materials somewhere on a USB stick, probably still in my laptop bag, I'll bet.
Well, I've sat and listened to the recording of his talk, so I have some idea what he was doing. And he had been, you know, he had made a couple of versions of it for the different GNU radios, but they were not compatible, so he had to write kind of take all the code and, you know, translate to the newer protocol. Sorry, not the newer protocol, the newer GNU radio commands. Interestingly, he has not written a protocol 2 version of it.
I actually did have occasion to clear off my workbench and need to replace I had a bulging battery in my old Nexus 5 cell phone, and loved that phone, so wanted to see if I could revive it by changing out the battery, and I was successful at doing that. That actually caused me to clean off the electronics workbench and get sad when I realized I haven't soldered anything recently, and I need to find time for that.
Yeah, you need a little solder smoke in your nose.
I saw an interesting, I don't think it was the ESP32, it may be in the 286 project of, somebody did a router rebooter where the ESP guy sits there listening to the Wi-Fi on the router, and if he can't get out to Google every now and then, the power to the Wi-Fi router is routed through a relay the ESP guy controls, and he reboots it, so sort of automates the process of rebooting your router occasionally.
Oh, cool.
Well, I wasn't using the expressive extension. I was using a product called Platform.io, so I've put a link down there.
Yeah, I see that. I'm just pulling that thing up.
Without the ability to dig deep inside the processor is very good.
So is this Visual Studio based, or is this, I guess this integrates into Visual Studio?
Yeah, you just loaded it. It's a plug-in to Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code.
Yeah, okay. I've been using Visual Studio Code for a while now.
I have as well.
Now, with a black or a white background?
Black, of course.
Yep, I'm black too.
I thought, oh God, I can't stand this with black background. So I switched over to white and thought, oh, I don't know, I think I prefer the black.
In the beginning, there was green text on a black background, and the programmer saw it and it was good.
Oh, I had orange on a black background.
Well, I had one of both.
Yeah, you can see I had both at one point.
Yeah, they were at different times, but I had a green one first and then an orange one second.
I used to have a horrible time with migraines, and God, I hated the when the GUIs came out with the black text on white screens. I just felt like I was looking into a light bulb, and I just thought it was the stupidest thing going.
Well, I'm still running Visual Studio C# with a white background. I don't know if I can change that now.
Yeah, I had set mine up with, I changed all the defaults on that stuff to be more of a dark background. And now you're getting dark themes on pretty much everything. Hell, Slack even has a dark theme now.
Say, Bill, you sent us a link to what looks like a calculator. Is this a new calculator you got?
It is. It's an HP calculator. I literally just got it. I just picked up the mail right before the session started. I just took it out of the box while we were talking. And this thing is really neat. It's a Swiss knockoff, I guess, of an HP 42. And God, this thing feels like it's solidly built.
And reverse Polish, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually can't use a non-reverse Polish calculator without, like, injuring my fingers.
It was, once you learned it, I didn't want to go back, but then people would say, well, how do you calculate on this? It doesn't work.
Well, it's like people can't borrow your calculator. Well, actually, it's funny. One of my coworkers was in my office back when we went to the office and picked up. I had a HP calculator on the desk there that actually I just used it to do hexadecimal math. But it was like, you know, real calculator. And I said, yeah. And he sort of looked at me and said, you know, yeah, old school, that's you.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
You know, this is one of my 20-something millennial colleagues. And yeah, I think calculators are pretty much a dying art, but I'm actually starting to, well, I now I think have a lifetime supply of RPM calculators that work, so.
I have one that I bought back about 94, and it still works great. The only thing you got to do is replace the batteries.
Yeah, I do. I've got two from college that have died, which I wish I could revive them. One's a HP 41, the other one's an HP 15C, but I've got some other, 48s and 32s that I've accumulated over the years, and well, I've got more of them than I need. But I saw this little Swiss Micro thing, and said, "Yeah, let me try one of those." And God, this thing feels I think it feels heavy because it's got a rechargeable USB battery in it that's probably got some density to it.
Well, that's pretty good. I said 94. It was 84.
Yeah, my two from that vintage no longer work, much to my annoyance, and would love to figure out how to revive them, but have never managed to do it.
Yep. I remember writing a regression program on one of them from scratch.
Well, the HP 41s didn't come with complex math when they didn't natively do complex, so I actually wrote a whole complex package where, you know, I could do math and complex numbers, which for a double E was a lifeline. And then I ended up writing a complex matrix solver on them, which for exams was an absolute killer to be able to put in, you know, a 3x3 matrix and get the damn thing to solve it.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. The complex math thing I was really proud of, because you could do it either in... I had modes where you could be either in rectangular or polar coordinates, or you could, you know, you could enter in either, you know, 5 plus IJ or, you know, 6 angle 30 and go from there. And, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Yes, I could see that.
Did you ever have one of the HPs where you could put the magnetic strip through it?
Yeah, my it's actually funny. My roommate liked my complex thing enough to, he went out and got the magnetic strip writer for the HP 41 to, or the reader writer with the little magnetic strip cards to be able to copy my programs off onto his 41.
Very good. I bought one when I finished college for doing the calculations for tracking amateur satellites, and I just used to run it through the HP, and you just put the date and time in, and it would tell you what satellites were available and where they were.
Oh, pretty neat. Yeah, I mean, they were great fun if, you know, programming a calculator, and you could just do, you know, really, I mean, you could do really involved stuff, but yeah, they were a bit tedious to program, but, you know, at the time they were, you know, really cool in that you have, hey, here's a handheld thing and I can program it to do what I want. This is wonderful. These days you do it on a phone and the phone goes up to the cloud and gets the answer for you instead.
I've just changed the subject, but have you used Node-RED?
No, I haven't. Heard of it, but can't say I've ever used it.
Okay, yeah, a lot of fun for putting test stick. Well, people use it for projects, but I had to put it together a graphical display very quickly. Decided to have a play with it. And it's pretty good.
What are you using it for?
Just displaying the value from a sensor in real time.
I see.
I had not used it.
So the stuff you're doing are you still in the collecting lots of data from sensors business and sending it up to the world, or?
Yep, exactly. And growing by the week at the moment.
My next project is building out an edge platform. So I'm trying to figure out why do people need edge platforms and why do they need low latency stuff in the cloud.
Okay, well, the mining industry here is really we're still going ahead. You know, all the mining workers were allowed to continue working, and we had the fly in, fly out staff allowed to travel, and the aircraft would carry them around. And so the mining industry here is still growing very well, but the requirements there for monitoring, you know, items running or their status on sites just going through the roof.
And those are somewhat quasi real-time requirements, or?
Yeah, I mean, one of the projects I'm working on now is monitoring the bearings in a conveyor belt, because if the the conveyor belt, one of the bearings seizes and the conveyor belt gets damaged, the cost of repairing it and the lost production is enormous. So mounting a little battery powered sensor on each of the bearings in the conveyor belt, which are very, very long, the cost savings to be able to predict preventive maintenance is enormous.
So that goes all the way back to, like, well, I mean, how quickly, if you have a bearing going out, I mean, is there like a SCADA system where it'll actually shut it down based on the sensor? Or is this more output to an operator and the operator takes action?
Yeah, basically what happens is you've got a ball, you know, ball bearing race, and as they start wearing, the bearings start to vibrate, and they'll vibrate at high frequency, you know, perhaps 6, 7, 8 kilohertz. So it's not it's not really looking at the, it's really acoustic analysis and doing FFTs and working out what the frequency spectrum of a properly running bearing looks like and the frequency spectrum of one which is proving, you know, is likely to die in the near future. So I do an FFT analysis of the bowl, the bearing as it's running, and then if particular frequency bands start showing up at a certain level, you send an alert out to the control center.
Well, now that's an interesting sensor. That's essentially your box is sitting there listening to it and saying, "Huh, that doesn't sound right."
Yeah, the big problem is it's got to be, these things are remote and they've got to be battery powered and last a long time, but they've also got to be able to wake up if there's an event occurs. So that wasn't particularly easy.
No, I doubt it now. An interesting set of requirements.
Doing the FFT was fun. I enjoyed doing that bit.
We all have our strange hobbies.
So, Phil, do they have to shut down to swap the bearings, or can they swap them while the thing is moving?
No, they have to shut down.
Yeah, I was thinking about, my father was in the mining industry, and here in Missouri, we have large ore bodies of lead, and looking at the conveyor belts that they had, I couldn't imagine changing bearings without stopping.
But if the if the thing screws up and the belt gets damaged, the obviously it's got to be stopped. But just to replace a section of the belt is very time and consuming and expensive. So having to stop to replace a bearing is is minimal disruption and cost.
Yep, I fully understand.
It was a fun project. We actually had to, because we didn't know what, nobody did. Didn't know what the frequency characteristics of a damaged bearing was going to be. So we had to actually build a test jig and drive it by an electric motor, then take a bearing apart and simulate, wear worn ball bearings, and then do FFT analysis of how it looked and sort of try and work out what the thresholds would be for, hey guys, you got a problem. So that was a very, very, very interesting project.
That is interesting.
Actually, I was able to use a lot of my old, using sound card and my KISS console code. It was pretty productive using some of that old stuff.
Wait, that's the interesting part, is all the different things you can use stuff you already built for.
So how did you come across the Platform.io stuff?
One of the websites I follow for doing ESP32 development, they tried all the different plugins for ESP32 under Visual Studio, and they recommended that one, so I had to play with it, and I really like it.
Yeah, looks interesting. Do the ESP32s do any better at low battery usage than the earlier ones?
I haven't done much work on the 8266, but the 32 has. Yeah, there's actually a completely separate processor in there, which is designed to wake the device up. It runs very, very low, very, very low power, and it's designed to it'll wake up itself, do a little bit of processing, and if necessary, it'll then wake up the main processor. But it'll work on, the nice thing about it is you can set voltage levels, a voltage level, and below a certain voltage, nothing happens. Within a mid-band, the low power processor will start up, and then above a certain voltage, it'll wake up and then wake up the main processor. But it's the best way of programming the low power processors in assembler. It's a little difficult to play with, but the power consumption is microamps. It's a really good way of keeping to sleep unless an event occurs. But The nice thing is you can actually do processing in the low power processor and make a decision whether you need to wake up the main processor or not.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking of my this app I want to build, or I want to build a water alarm, where sort of the thing I'd like to do is have it, the requirement I'd like to meet is be able to run for a year on a 9-volt battery and have the thing reach out when it detects water. It reaches out on Wi-Fi and, you know, sends an alert that way. Also, you know, locally makes some noise with, you know, a beeper type thing. And when I knew the 286 couldn't do it, but I wonder if the 30, sounds like the 32 might.
That would be no problem at all for the 32, Bill.
Okay, I really need to consider retiring.
That's pretty good, Bill.
If you can use the Wi-Fi, you can use the Wi-Fi connection, and then, you know, it'll actually, once you've got into the cloud, you can send yourself an SMS wherever you are, Bill.
Well, yeah, except I don't actually, you see, I don't trust these things to go to the cloud, so I actually want them to go to my own machine. I refuse to do home control that goes through the cloud. Actually, who the hell was it? I saw a story sometime this week where one of the home automation vendors are essentially holding their customers hostage, where if you don't send them $5 a month, your stuff's going to stop working.
Okay. The other thing you can do is you can connect a cellular modem chip to the ESP32 and send an SMS to you directly.
Now that would work. Yeah, that's actually the process that would be interesting here would be to do it, because it's funny, I work in the cloud, but I am deeply untrusting of the cloud.
Good evening, gentlemen. How's everybody tonight?
Hello, Rick.
Yeah, sorry I'm late. I was got into a game of Scrabble with my wife and lost track of time and ended up losing too, so double whammy.
I wanted to ask Phil a question. Have you tried the ESP32-S2, which is apparently a new, fairly new chip?
No, just the standard one, Doug.
The S2 is supposed to have some RF capability, and so you could actually at least do Wi-Fi.
Oh, the 32's got Wi-Fi and Bluetooth built in.
Well, okay. Well, I'm not sure what the S advantage is. S2.
Rick, thanks for the document on the antenna. I appreciate that. My Radcom arrived the next day, so timely. I did a similar trick to prevent the to keep the remote active probe quiet. But I used Cat5 cable all the way from the shack to the probe, and that worked really well. In that, I could plug the antenna into the receiver without the active probe being powered on, and there's absolutely no increase in the noise floor whatsoever. And that was sort of down in the 100 minus 130 dBm. So, using a twisted pair to connect to the probe worked very, very well. But I've got it mounted in the back of the garden in the far corner away from the house and every other neighbour as well as I could. But the noise floor is still very, very high.
Did you try rotating the antenna to see if you could null out the noise?
No, I was using a whip.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were using a loop. Okay. Interestingly enough, I was looking at the Radio Amateurs of Canada magazine for this month, and there's a similar article in there. I should send it to you, where they use Cat5 cable, and they also broke the Cat5 signal pair using decoupling by using a transformer secondary, like a 12 120 to double 12 volt a transformer with a double 12 volt secondary winding, and they used the two secondary windings to decouple the signal lead from the antenna. So I'll see if I can find a copy of that, or get a copy of it, and I'll send it to you just for your interest.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. That would be useful. I used one twisted pair for the signal, and then another twisted pair for the power and ground. And I floated them at the shack end. But as I say again, there was no. When I'd used coax, you know, with the ferrite clamps on the coax, as soon as you plugged the coax into the receiver, the noise floor went up enormously, so there was a lot of pickup on the coax, and I couldn't get rid of it. But with the balance feed, absolutely zero. So I was pretty happy with that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Anyways, I'll get that article, or maybe the whole magazine, if I can get it in a small enough download, or a small enough that I can attach it to an email. They have various sizes of the magazine in different PDF sizes, so I should be able to get one I can email to you. I'll do that tomorrow. You guys were talking about... I'm sorry?
Sorry, no problem. Thanks very much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just wanted to switch back to the ESP32s. I've been playing with an ESP32 here, and I was just wondering what context you were using ESP32s for, Phil.
I'm using them for monitoring sensors. I've got a mining project where I need to determine the frequency of vibration of roller bearings on a conveyor belt.
Oh, cool. Well, so you're using the Wi-Fi capabilities of it?
No, I'm connecting to a cellular modem.
Yeah, they're quite capable devices and easy to work with. Are you programming them through the an IDE, like Arduino IDE or something else?
Well, I started off like that, but I found the productivity was very low. So I just mentioned earlier, I moved to the Visual Studio Code and with the Platform IO plugin. But the biggest breakthrough was the ability to connect a hardware interface to the JTAG pins. So you could set breakpoints, you could examine variables while the program was running. You could change variables on the fly without having to recompile and download code. Very, very productive. And I love the Visual Studio development environment anyway. But for the hobbyists, the Arduino environment's fine, but the library management I didn't like, and the fact you can't set breakpoints or examine variables was not very productive. And also, there's the Platform IO, when you type a line of code, if you've made an error, it advises you before, and you can't compile it till you fixed it. So it's a very nice development environment.
Oh, that's great. You've taken it to a much higher level than I have. that's a neat application. Oh, very good. Congratulations.
Okay, well, I've got a work colleague calling me saying I have to go. So 7-3-0, stay well, and catch up next week. Bye-bye.
73, same to you, Phil.
73, Phil. Good to hear from you.
Have a good afternoon, Phil. Take care.
User disconnected from your channel.
Hey, Dave, have you used that Platform IO IDE?
Oh, yeah, I haven't used the Platform IO, but both Bill and I use Visual Studio Code for just regular programming all the time. And it's essentially, that's the interface that it's very adaptable to whatever language you want to work in. And Phil is using it with this because it has both debugging and some linting code completion.
I didn't know about anything about it. I'll have to take a close look at it.
If you write code in any of the standard languages, they have really good add-on tools for that. I use it with Go and C and I have used it with Python, and then I also use it when I'm making input files like in JSON.
That sounds pretty capable.
It's written in JavaScript, and I believe it's maintained by Microsoft, but it's free.
Free as in, actually I have to check on that. Is it free as in beer or free as in freedom? But it is definitely Microsoft.
Yeah, you download it from a site, and you have to agree. But so if they yanked it, but I even found a Vim add-on so that I can use Vim commands while I'm typing, and most of them work.
Why would one want to add on Vim?
Because Vim commands come out of my fingers without even me thinking about it.
Unfortunately for me, it's either XEdit or Emacs commands that come out of my fingers. But, actually, I still use Emacs quite a bit. But it's another tool that gets me yelled at about old schoolisms.
Yep. So I had to do that out of self-defense.
Yeah, the Visual Studio took over most of my development team a year and a half ago or so. Everybody seemed to switch it. We have been running on Atom, and people seem to find Visual Studio more appealing.
I kind of did that, too. I had been using Vim a lot, and I tried Atom, liked it. But then when the Visual Studio came along, Visual Studio Code, came along, it was so adaptable, and it's basically a web page that's running inside its own little window because it's using all the tools that are in Chrome.
Yeah, you see, my work habits have now gotten to, there's 3 dozen files open in Code, and then there's 9 dozen tabs open in various Chrome windows. I like pretty hard to not get lost.
Yeah, that many it would, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I never think, why close a tab when you can just open a new one?
That's right. Well, I've been working on a graphing program that runs in Chrome, so SVG, but a full feature, not a full feature, but a well-done scientific graph.